We have, it's not really new. We're going to go back to the old thing that we've always did before the last 2 years. 2 years ago, we did a survey of the Bible to prepare us for our church plan of reading through the Bible. And then this last year, we skipped through the Bible, looking at a passage of Scripture that we were going to be reading in the coming week. And now we are going to begin, we're going to go back to going verse by verse slowly through a book of the Bible. And I don't know if I was teasing Sam or Sam was teasing me, but I said probably, but he'll be in Mr. Hall's class but before we finish this book. More chapters in this book than any book I've ever tackled before. You know, we're going to do the book of Exodus. And we might even go further than that. There's a few things that I'd like to do for us. I've never, in this class, and I don't think really even in any situation, taught slowly, verse by verse, through an Old Testament book, unless it was really short and I was able to do it during the summertime. I think we did Ecclesiastes that way and something like that. But I'd like to work through the book of Exodus. I'm calling this series in the context and content of Exodus. That's not very, that's not a like real surprising title. That is what, I haven't called it that before, but that is what we've done as we've gone along. But one thing that I want to try to do is bring even more context into what we're doing. I think next week, it might be the next week after that, we'll look at the historical context, the background. What's going on in the world, in particular, in Egypt, when Exodus comes along. I also want to look at the biblical context. So much that happens in the book of Exodus, we see later on in the Bible. We see in the New Testament. And you know what? Before we get into going further about what I want to do, I do want to mention some other things. So let me just pause that thought, come back to it. We haven't been able to report the offering total that we gave in October and November, which was to help the Independent Baptist School of Theology in Zambia. So we collected together on those October-November Sundays $747.57. And I have not gotten, I don't know what we're going to do with it yet. I asked Pastor Dameron and he said, Dave would know that, David will know that, and we'll probably talk about it after the holidays. So it's the 3rd of January. Have you talked yet? So in the next few weeks, we'll figure out how we're going to use that money to help that project. A lot of different things. We may help. One of the things that he says is even there's probably fees that Pastor Chilando will have to pay to get the thing registered, whatever. That'll be used for that. And then if you looked at the handout, you see that the, as we have done the last several years, our offerings through January, from January through March, will be used to help pastors or other folks be able to come to our preaching conference. I was thinking, well, what did we do with that money last year? And I remember that we had invited an evangelist, I think it was Pastor Starr, to preach for us at preaching conference. And since we had to cancel him, we just sent him the money that we... as an evangelist, he didn't have a church supporting him. So that's what we did with it last year. It was quite an encouragement, but it didn't get him here. anyway, but we'll be collecting that money to help pastors who come or others. You probably noticed that half the other side of the page is the January verse memorization. And with the amount of involvement we had in December's verse memorization, which was just one line, remember? Do we remember that? Casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. How many remember that? How many memorized it? Okay. So this is going to be much harder, but I'd like to tackle these things with a little bit more fervor, more fervently. We're not going to spend a lot of time in class, but I'd like to spend a little more time. What we're doing is taking the verse that's in the church calendar. We're going to have it for the month. So it's not like you got to memorize this verse by next Sunday. Okay? But I think we should try. We should work at reading it each day. Take this home or take something like it home. Put it in your Bible with your Bible reading, even if you're not using this Bible reading, but put it there. Just read through it twice slowly. And if we don't memorize it, there'll be certain phrases that we will remember, and it will help us in our life as believers. So let's work on that, and then we have our graduate and missionary of the week there to remember this week also. This is why it takes us a long time to get through books of the Bible. Mr. Brady mentioned social services, and I just have to mention this. It's been a long time since Fairhaven has, you know, railed on social services, and we need to do it. So I'm not going to rail on them. But you must understand that just the term social services is an anti-God term. What it stands for is anti-God. Social services is the arm that it's the arm of the state that is used to provide welfare, everything that a home is commissioned by the Bible to provide, social services provides. And since it's trying to do what God says homes are supposed to do, it's anti-God. And they are anti-God. They're anti-home. Okay? Maybe the person that's sitting there in the office doesn't say, I hate homes. But the whole system hates families. A family stands in direct contradiction. Families are a heresy for a society that depends on a social services. It is evil. Families are evil to societies. Now, they will use families, but just as little as they feel they need to. Okay? They look at the children that come from families as the property or the responsibility of the state. The state has a responsibility to educate those children so that they will grow up to be a part, fill their proper place in society. And that is all the result of looking at the state as God. Now, we don't say, oh, we worship America or we worship Caesar, but we do. We look to the state for our sustenance, okay? For our check. How many of you got your check in your banking account today or yesterday or this week? Okay? Now, we don't get one all the time, but how many people are like, they got to do something? They got to do something. No, not if you believe in God, the one true God, but if you believe that government is God and has this responsibility, they got to do something. They provide the education. They provide the order. Government thinks it can provide the order that society has. That's why the government thinks it can change the order. God has said that marriage is between a man and a woman. But the government thinks that they can decide order. Marriage and homes are the foundational building block, order of society. You don't have a godly or orderly society without families. Okay? Because that's the way God created things. Now, we can try, but what we find out is that it doesn't work, and lo and behold, the reason it doesn't work is because God's the one that created it. And if you go against God, that's anti-God, right? Anyway, rant, but we have to get this out sometimes because we kind of just go through life and social services and whatever, and you hear even Christians saying, you probably need to get social services involved in that. And in one sense, I don't know that I should say this, when I say, because our world and our country, inside our world is so broken, sometimes you have to use this. But Christians should never be using social services. But if you're trying to help somebody who's not a Christian and their home is broken to shreds, you may have to. It may be that that's the proper thing to do because they're not willing to accept. They're not a part of our church. Okay, so maybe social services has a role. We say, okay, they're doing that, just like things happened in the Bible. that just like Deborah in Judges, okay, it happened, God used it, but God had called men to be leaders. All right, so there's, anyway. So, back to what we're going to be doing for a while, except for the summers. I'd like to give the redemptive context when we get into all the things that are all the things in the law, in the tabernacle. We're going to take our time and look at how it applies to Christ, how Christ fulfills these things, how the New Testament talks about them. So I'm looking forward to, there's so much here that we can really be helped by it. And we are blessed to be able to be New Testament Christians. So we can see all these things. We don't have this veil, the veil that was put over Moses, right? That the New Testament does. We don't have this veil that we look at, like, why are we doing these things? We know why all these things are in the Old Testament, in Exodus for us. And so, that's kind of my thought. It's a developing thought. I've got all kinds of ideas up here. I'm starting to try to write them down, and we'll see from week to week how it grows and develops. But what we're going to do this morning is just to quickly is to start by giving a lesson that I gave 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we had just started, 2 years minus a week. We had just started our survey of the Bible, and so I'm going to give us review this survey of Exodus so that we kind of get the big picture that what we're going to do as we continue along fits inside of. The one thing about doing a survey of Exodus today is that I don't have to do a survey of Leviticus next week. So it could take us several weeks to just get through the survey of Exodus. Sam's eyes just went like this. Oh, it's worse when me and Sam talk on Saturday night. The teasing is much more on Sunday morning. Anyway, so Exodus. What is Exodus about? If we're just kind of going through, many of you know this. You grew up going to Sunday school. Many of you went to Christian school, but many of you didn't. So let's just try to get an idea of, you know, Genesis, Exodus, second book of the Bible. What is it about? Well, the author of Exodus is Moses. And Moses is the central character. We're going to find out about Moses in chapter 2. And he's going to be with us for the next four books, for all the way through Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. And then we also find out, or we understand, that he also wrote, however we want to look at that, Genesis also, the books of the law, the first five books of the Bible, are the books of Moses. He is a central character to this book. He's a central character to the Old Testament. He's a central character to the Bible. Jesus Christ is the central character of the Bible. But Moses even shows up in Jesus' life, right? Remember? He went up on the mountain, was transfigured, and there was Moses with him. And then we're dealing, the New Testament books are all dealing with Moses. How does what Moses said in the law apply to us still? How do we work this out? So Moses is a central character, and we actually will see, a lot of his life, his actual biography, in the beginning of the book and throughout the book. The main theme of Exodus is the history of Israel from the death of Joseph to the completion of the tabernacle, and the main theme is the Exodus, is their leaving the land of Egypt and heading to the land of promise. And the key thought through the book, through this, is the idea of deliverance. There's the idea of redemption. In Exodus chapter 6, verse 6, God says, "Wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will rid you out of their bondage, and I will redeem you with a stretched out arm and with great judgments. This is the first time the word redeem is found in the Bible. And so, he's going to redeem them from Egypt. And then, another aspect of deliverance is salvation. And salvation, we see the very first time the word salvation is in the Bible is in Exodus chapter 15. Exodus chapter 15. And in Exodus chapter 15 is when the children of Israel were singing after they had been, after Pharaoh's army was crushed and drowned by the Red Sea. And 15:1 says, "Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord and spoke, saying, I will sing unto the Lord, for he hath triumphed gloriously. The horse and his rider hath he thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will prepare him a habitation, my father's God, and I will exalt him." So in this idea of deliverance, we have redemption and salvation in Exodus. So if we, as we're going through and thinking about what happens in Exodus, and Exodus is easier to remember than, say, Leviticus and Numbers. It's got some easier, whatever, shape that the book follows to remember. But in the first two chapters, some person who outlined it or thought, analyzed the book, says this is the period of bondage. In chapter 1, we have the oppression in Egypt. The last time we saw the children of Israel, they were sitting pretty. They had the best land in Egypt, and their brother was the prime minister of Egypt. Things were going really good, and now they're under oppression. So what happens? That's given to us very quickly in chapter 1. And then in chapter 2, we have the early life. Well, the new king comes along who didn't know Joseph, and we'll talk about that. Of course, he knew the name Joseph. He comes along only, seems like, 20 years after Joseph dies. So, it's, you know, 20 years isn't that long, historically. But he comes, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the historical context of the Exodus in the next lesson. But he enslaves Israel and even goes as far as to say, wow, they're growing too fast. We need to slow this down. Let's kill all the baby boys. And we'll get into that. But he talks to the midwives, has another scheme to just throw the boys into the Nile. A man and his wife have a child. They've already had two children, but they have another child. And he is a strong boy and he's goodly. And so they hide him until they can't, and then they put him into the river. And this is Moses. Moses is discovered by the king's daughter, Pharaoh's daughter, and then adopted and grows up in the palace. The best of Egyptian education and upbringing and training. And about the age of 40, Moses decides that now's the time to deliver his people from bondage. Historically, it's unique that this is a time of possible upheaval. There's change of power. And Moses might have been making a political move. We understand that this was a fleshly thing when we look at it. And so it might have also been he's trying to make a political move and establish himself as the next ruler of Egypt, and to then he could free his people. We'll look at that later. But it doesn't work out the way he thought it would. And he flees to Midian and there runs into the family of Jethro and marries one of his daughters. So, and then he's there for 40 years. So in the first two chapters of Exodus, we have Moses' first 80 years of his life. Not a lot there, but some. Then in chapters 3 through 12, we call this maybe the period of deliverance. God comes to Moses and calls him. You remember that? He says, "My people, I hear the cries of my people, and I want you to deliver them." And what does Moses do? He has all of his excuses. This excuse, I can't speak. I can't, you know, get somebody else. I don't want to. But he has his excuses. Aaron comes and meets him, and Moses and Aaron go to the Pharaoh and demand the liberation of Israel. Let my people go. And Pharaoh is like, who's the Lord that I should do what he says? You guys have way too much time on your hands to be able to think that you can do all the, just kind of leave your work aside and run off into the wilderness and sacrifice. So you're going to get more work. So the bondage becomes more severe, the workload heavier, and the means to accomplish it is lessened. God, during this time, gives some instruction to Moses and Aaron and repeats his covenant with Israel through Moses and Aaron that he had given to Abraham. So Exodus, of course, is in the Bible, and it's got a context. Who are these children of Israel? Okay, well, Israel is Jacob. Jacob's the son of Isaac, who's the son of Abraham. Abraham, God had come to Abraham, and this is in a context. Before this time, mankind had just ruined everything God had ever set up in the garden, government after, you know, after Noah, all of this. So God comes to Abraham and says, Abraham and says, I'm going to bless those that bless you. I'm going to curse those that curse you. And in you shall all nations of the earth be blessed. And so God, back to Exodus, God repeats that covenant that he had with Israel to Moses and Aaron right before they head into this contest. The contest with Pharaoh it's often called, and that's a contest with 10 plagues. I'm not going to list through the plagues right now, but those plagues, two things are happening during the plagues. It is divine judgment on an evil ruler, and it's showing the divine superiority over false gods. Egypt at this time was a very powerful country, and where did they get that power from? From their gods. But the world would have thought they got that power from their gods, from their military strength. So from their leader, Pharaoh, even some pharaohs were considered gods. So the Pharaoh is a god, these other gods, these things are what is making Egypt a great nation. And the plague is God's judgment on that evil ruler, and God's judgment or his superiority over those gods that the people, that the world would have depended on, and Egypt in particular. At the end of this contest, the 10 plagues, there's the Feast of Passover that is celebrated, instituted, we might say, for the very first time. It's at the time of the 10th plague. All the firstborn in Egypt were killed. But the firstborn of Israel were redeemed, were rescued, were saved by the blood of a lamb being painted, we might say, over the doorpost of their homes. And what we see here in the Passover that is that God has justice over evil, but he provides mercy, or he's merciful through a substitute. Then, on the night of the Passover, Pharaoh says, go, get out of here. I don't want this anymore. Of course, his firstborn was killed that night. And we begin a period of, this general outside outline is what you'll find in Thompson Chain Reference Bible. We've referenced that a few times. A period of discipline. And a discipline, this is maybe a more broader definition of discipline, is giving order, getting the folks into line. They had been slaves. Now they're free. How free are they? All of that type of thing. And so we had the Exodus. And in the Exodus, we remember that Pharaoh changes his mind, chases after them, and he's destroyed by his own anger. He's just going to follow them into the Red Sea, and God closes the Red Sea over top of them. He rescues his people and destroys Pharaoh's army. And we have the first song of worship in the Bible, which we began to read there in Exodus chapter 15, is the first song in the Bible. After that, we have the experiences that they had on their way down to Sinai. Soon after this, rather than heading straight to the promised land, they kind of take a hard right and go down into toward Mount Sinai. And along the way, they're thirsty. Finally, they find water, but it's bitter. Marah. They cry out. Moses gets instruction from God, and that water is made sweet. Then they go to another place, Elim, where there's sweet water and palm trees. Then they keep going. God continues to lead them, and they are hungry. And they start crying out for the flesh pots of Egypt. Things were better back there. Things were better back there. How our minds change, right? Even we see this in our own lives. We finally get deliverance from something, and it's surprising how long, how short it is until the flesh comes and says, why don't you just do that? That was fun when you did that. Remember how much pleasure that gave you? And we forget the bondage. But they're crying out for the flesh pots. They're hungry, and God responds by giving them manna. Manna means, what is it? They didn't know what it was, but he provided them manna, and that manna continued for about 40 years. But he provides manna. Then they're thirsty again, right? And Moses doesn't know what to do again. And God says, strike the rock. And this rock, water comes out of it. And it gives them sustenance for a long time also in the middle of the wilderness. Right after this, Amalek, which was a traveling band of marauders, attacks the back end of them. The stragglers, the weaker ones, and Joshua fights against Amalek. So after this time, there's a period of legislation and organization, and we'll kind of just go quickly through that next week. But chapter 18 is Jethro's counsel. Then God shows up on Sinai, and we have the beginning of his covenant with Israel there in the Ten Commandments in chapter 20. So we're heading into Exodus. I want us to have a very good understanding of it. To me, it is foundational to so much that we do even still today in our lives. It's foundational to our governmental system. It's foundational to our understanding of of justice. It should be foundational to our understanding of what's right and wrong in society around us. And then it's foundational to our own salvation and what Christ is. Because Christ fulfills the laws that we read about first in Exodus.